Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in to a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today is BYU basketball assistant coach Chris Burgess. Chris, it is so good to see you, my friend.
Man, it is so good to be here on this podcast and talking with you, Chef. This is exciting.
Let me tell you, when your hire became official, I texted you. I was pumped. I am so happy to have you back at BYU. From everybody I've talked to, and it sounds like everybody you've heard from, everybody's just so thrilled that you're back here in Provo.
Yeah, my family and I are so excited. We really are. The warm welcome that we got and we're continuing to get has just been, humbling, first of all, but just been so excited, and it's a big reason I wanted to be a part of this, just with the fan base and people that care, and they're just all in, and I felt that for 3 years, you know, in the previous staff, and from the moment it got announced, I've just been a warm, warm welcome, and so it's exciting.
Well, continuing with the word exciting, what's happening with the program right now has I don't remember, even when things were great in previous seasons, the excitement level from fans right now is through the roof. What is that like to be a part of when you know that all of the fan base and everybody on the outside looking in is so excited about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, you know, I think that, like, there's so many different ways to skin a cat, right, with your coaching staff and how you go about it. And I think what, you know, Coach Cleveland and Coach Rose and Coach Pope all did, like, in their successful ways is fantastic, and change is always hard. But when you get a guy like Kevin Young to come from the NBA with his mindset and his background and the respect he has from his peers and the players he's coached, right? And so when I was talking to him through the short interview process, I could feel it, right? I could feel it myself, what the fans are feeling, just with the excitement to work for him, right? And just with how he's putting together staff, you know, the connections he has around not just the college basketball world, but the international world and the professional world, his mindset in terms of trying to make this place a place to develop young men to be prepared for the NBA, right? And doing college games at the same time. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. And when he said that, like, he truly means that, because that's what he knows. Right. And so it's fun to kind of see the fans' reaction and all in, because I know losing, you know, a coach of the caliber of Coach Pope, losing that, I'm sure that was hard, but to be able to, you know, bring in new energy, right, different energy, and a guy like Coach Kevin Young, it's exciting. And it's another reason why I'm excited to help with the transition, help this team, help this, you know, this program continue to build off what it's been doing.
Well, and, you know, you've obviously been here before, so you know what it was, you know, when you were here a couple of seasons ago, but it sounds like his pitch really got you, like we're hearing it's getting these recruits coming in.
Yeah, no question. Like, you know, when we're talking to recruits and it's his, at the time he's talking, that's what I felt when I was sitting one-on-one with him during the interview process. It's like, man, I want to learn, like, as a coach, right? I want to learn so much from you, the way you talk, the way you go about your business as a professional, the way you offensively, defensively scheme, attacking different things. I got so excited, right? And so I know these players are too, right? And it's hard for me when I'm sitting in these recruiting meetings not to, like, you know, put myself as a 16, 17-year-old kid and not get excited. I was like, oh, man, this guy's – I'm drinking what he's selling. So it's great, because he is going to prepare these young men, both on and off the court. And what's the other part that's great is, like, we get to talk to all these recruits, and we have a fantastic core of young men already on our team, Dallin and Richie and Trey, you know, Afus. And so you have that core that, like, truly understands sacrifice. And now, you know, for the greater good of your team, and you're talking to these recruits to come in and fill these spaces, right? That's what makes BYU so special, right? So that's exciting.
So what is the vision that you and Coach Young and the rest of the staff have for this program, both present, meaning this upcoming season, as well as in the future? I mean, what do you and the rest of the staff want this program to become?
Yeah, so like we touched individually about preparing these young men as best we can to be professional, right? We've touched on that, right? And I think the staff that he's putting together has the experience to do that, right, as far as player development. And the other thing is, like, we want to be successful in the Big 12. Like, we don't want to just get to the NCAA tournament. We want to be contenders every single year in the Big 12, and we want to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Like, that is the job, right? And that is why, you know, that is Tom Homo's vision. That's why he brought, you know, Coach KY, and that's why KY's hired the staff. But that is the vision. So that's what we want to do. We want to be a program that's continuously in the top 25. We want to be in a program where, you know, we're fighting for 4- and 5-star recruits. We want to be a program that when kids are transferring in the portal, right, like they want BYU to call them because they want to be a part of something special. Because, you know, like I talked about, the resources and the fan base and the people that care here in Provo for this university is so special. That's what we want. We want to sustain the success that staff had last year. But we want to continue to build on it. And that's the job. That's why we're here.
Obviously, anybody that's paying attention to collegiate athletics knows that the landscape has changed dramatically over the last couple of seasons. And everyone essentially is reacting to that on the fly. And BYU has gone out, made some splash hires, won some major recruiting battles. I'm really curious from your perspective, how do you describe the commitment that BYU has made to the basketball program to give you guys the tools to make these things happen?
Yeah, I think it's always been there. And then when you go to the Big 12, coming back and being a part of the Big 12, the commitment's taken another step, right? With just wanting to win and putting a ton of resources at, you know, our disposal to be successful. You know, honestly, someone like Coach Mike, our strength coach, like he came in and wanted a different weight room in terms of, hey, the athletic department gave him the resources you need to build a new weight room. It's little things like that that their commitment is super strong, right? When Dallin and Richie go to the portal and Coach Kevin Young's talking to him, right? And our commitment is, the commitment from the athletic department to be like, no, we're going to go find a staff and find a team that can get us back to the NCAA tournament. I just think it comes from all different areas around the program. And again, it's like another reason, you know, that I wanted to be a part of it because I knew their commitment was there.
You know this. BYU will always be a place that seeks out the top talent who also just happen to be members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. With more schools, and we've seen this really over the, you know, it's evolved over the last decade or two, both in all sports, but with more schools now also going after the top LDS talent, has the pitch to those players evolved over the years, or maybe how has the pitch evolved?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think because from a recruiting standpoint, you know, you got to put a fence, you got to build a fence around those kids, right? You do, whether it's in-state or the members of the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints, those basketball players that are Big 12 caliber players, you got to build a fence and you got to make that the core. You do. You want those guys. You want the Trevin Nels, the Downs, the Richies, the Treys, right? I know I'm forgetting some guys, but you want those guys, right? And you got to get them and you got to land them. But the pitch is still the same, right? The BYU means so much, right? Like in a day and age, and we talked about the landscape where guys are pretty focused on the back of their jersey, right? Their last name. I still think you can get a group of guys, right, that have kind of grown up in this faith to represent something bigger than themselves, right? And I think that's what makes this place super special. And so our pitch is a little different, you know, with Coach Young. Still, like, we want to develop these men into, like, being pros. We still want to do that, right? We want, and now the pitch too is, like, come play against the best. Yeah. Right? Not just like in the Big 12, but every day in practice. Right? Like we talk about that. Like this isn't what it was 5 or 6 years ago, right, as the WCC team, even though WCC is a fantastic conference. This is the Big 12. So that pitch is different, right? The connectivity that these people have, the resources at their disposal in terms of the people they're all potentially able to meet, the NIL deals that they've been able to do around this state, right? Like we always talk about, like, you know, NIL might not be life-changing, but the connection you make with some of these, you know, people could be life-changing, right, when you're done playing. And there's a number of examples for former players that are doing really, really well to this day simply because of their connection, because there's so many people that come to your games that want to be a part of your four-year career, right? And so that is a huge pitch. That is something that sometimes as a 17-year-old kid you don't understand, but right? I think the older they get, they're like, man, that really does resonate more now than it did when I was a junior, senior in high school.
Besides being handsome and one heck of a guy, one of the things that people talk about you is just how good of a recruiter you are. That's always brought up, and they talk about that aspect. Yeah. How did that develop for you? As you've gone on, is that something that has always come easy to you, or have you tweaked things along the way? Take me through the evolution of how you have become such a good recruiter.
You know, it's something that I've always asked. I kind of wonder, but people have kind of told me. People are close to me. My brothers, my sister, my in-laws, my wife, of course. And I think what the evolution is like, I'm not like the best salesman. I'm just not. I'm not over exaggerator, but what I am is a connector, right? And I think that what people find when I can build, I'm really good with high school kids because I have a longer time to build relationships with these kids, is I think they feel heard and they feel safe when they talk to me. And they can talk to me about everything because I bring up my personal experiences as a former recruit and as a former player. Like I was the star, right? Like I mean, I'm a McDonald's American. I was the role player, right? At Duke, I was the seventh man on the bench. I was the guy who didn't get off the bench, right? I was the guy. So I've been in all their shoes, right? And so I'm able to relate to all their different experiences. You know, and then I played a long time, right? I played a long time after college simply because I loved the game. And so I think that – and then I think that, you know, especially when you're recruiting LDS kids, like I think I know all the different types of LDS kids there are, whether they're in-state or out-of-state, right? There's the kids that are completely about ball, right? They're completely about ball, but – they attend their church, you know, they're spiritual, but basketball comes first and, you know, and they're that way. Then you have the ones that are trying to figure out their testimony, right? They're trying to figure it out. They believe in the church, but they're truly trying to be converted, right? And they're basketball players, right? And at some point they'll figure it out and that's their own conversion. And then you have the ones that are, you know, get back from the missions. They're all about their mission and trying to find a wife, and basketball's important to them, but their family is probably more important. So I think it's about finding which one, each one of those ends, and they're going to constantly change, right, kind of who they are. And the thing is, again, I go back to connecting, relating to that, because I was all three of those guys, right? I was all three of those different people. And so I think the biggest thing is I'm a connector. I love getting to know kids. I draw upon my experience with my daughters, who are student-athletes as well. They're volleyball players, and I talk to them all the time. Like, hey, what did you like about this coach who recruited you? Dad, they do TikTok videos with me. Write it down. Okay, well, what kind of TikTok? What's popular right now? Right. And so I draw upon them all the time in terms of what's out there, what's bothering you, what's this, what are you guys feeling right now? Right. Because, you know, 25 years ago when I was their age is way different than now with all the technology and social media and everything, as you know. Right. And so I try to draw upon all those experiences and I try to relate to the kid. I try to understand what makes this kid tick, like what makes this tick. And then most importantly, what is going to make this kid talk? Right, money's gonna make the kid talk because a lot of coaches want to hear themselves talk. I don't want to talk. I want to listen to these kids. I want to see what's important, and then I'll hit them. So I just think it's a little bit of everything. But I try to be. I think one of my strengths as a human being is just what I've been blessed with is I'm a connector, and I try to connect with you on your level so that you feel safe to come talk to me about anything. Right. I think that's one of my strengths.
This may sound weird that this is one of the first things that popped into my mind when your name was brought up and you were a possibility, and ultimately when you were able to sign to come back to BYU.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of was, I wonder if he kept any of his BYU stuff. So like, did you have any BYU stuff anymore? It's not like when you come down that you aren't going to get more gear. So it wasn't going to be an issue.
So,
but I was curious if you had completely gotten rid of all the blue and everything in the closet was red.
You know, so when I had left, I knew my history at BYU was not finished. And so, but I have really good friends that I play this morning old man basketball with. And one of them is Russell Larson, former great
there
BYU.
There we go. Russ, great
guy.
And
another one is McKelly Wesley. So I'm playing with them in the morning. They're like, Burge, what are you going to do with your BYU stuff? I'm like, guys, it's in a bin right now. Like, I can bring the bin. You guys take what you need, like, whatever. I'm like, don't, you know, whatever you want to do. So I bring it to him. Russ is like, puts in the back of his truck, and he's just like, hey, I'll bring this bin back to you and take whatever. It has been, I don't know, forever, about 2-3 months, and he doesn't give it back at all. He just kind of forgets about it. And I go about my life the next 2 years. Well, anyway, so I accept the job. I get a text from Russ immediately being like, so pumped you're back. I'm so excited you're not getting your gear back. So I was like, hey, Russ, keep it. You deserve it. You earned it. Like, you know, obviously he's a Cougar great. And I just knew I would get kind of more stuff, which my wife was like, don't get all that gear back. There's not enough room in the closet. Like, so, but there are a few things that I'm like super upset I don't have, but I am glad it's going towards great use.
There you go. Yes, there you go. Well, and you told a funny story about, you talked about how your family at the beginning of this, when we started this interview, how excited they are to be back. But your sons were like, when can we go to the bookstore? Yeah. Like, they wanted to get the gear. Tell that story, because I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah. First of all, my kids, you know, we're at UVU for 4 years.
Yep.
And then when you're a Utah County, they were really young, but when you're in Utah County, you know, you either cheer for like BYU or Utah.
Yeah.
And I loved my time at Utah Valley, but it's kind of the truth, right? You pick a side. Yes. It's like being at Duke or North Carolina, even though there's some NC State. Like,
It's
the two, right? And so when we finally got to BYU, 2019-2020, my kids were so excited that they could be, there was a line right at school, and like, they were so excited to be on one of those lines. Anyway, so they were all with BYU. When I left, I have it on video, my boys were just crushed, right? And it wasn't really about Utah. It was about leaving what BYU was all about and the friendships they made and like the games, right? They just loved their time at the Marriott Center. And then the football games. And yeah. So anyway, so I have to let my boys know. And they were like, no way. Are you serious? They were super excited we're going back. And they're like, Dad, we don't have any BYU stuff. We don't have any BYU stuff. And so I was like, okay, tomorrow, like, you come to work, we'll see what we can get. And they're like, no, Dad, we're going to the bookstore. And like, you're going to get us, like, there were certain things they wanted. And so we went to the bookstore the next day, and they each got like a hat, a long sleeve shirt, short sleeve shirt, some shirts. And then they go to school the next day. Everyone's like, wait, you were just wearing red like yesterday, right? And so, but because, you know, you live in Utah, we had still lived in Utah County even when
I was
in
never moved.
Yeah, I was in Lehigh. So they all kind of knew, you know, from their parents in school, they're like, his dad moved again. So, but yeah, they're all in and they were super excited. I FaceTimed my two girls because they got, you know, Matt Norlander tweets it out. And yep. I was like, I don't want my girls to find out from.
Because they're out of state.
They're out of state.
Yeah.
So I hurry and FaceTime them. And my son's in the back. One of my sons in the back, he doesn't know either. And I called my girls and I was like, hey, it's about to be posted. I'm like, I want you guys to know. And so as I'm talking on FaceTime, you can see the screen go to the pause little menu. And they're already sharing the story. I'm like, Zoe, KJ, like, listen, don't share this. Like, but it's that generation. And so we have to pull over. We have to let my boys know. But my third daughter, her name is Ava. She's a 15-year-old lone peaker. Mm-hmm. She was like, she texted my wife, Lisa, a screenshot of the post being like, what? Because one of her close friends had texted her being like, your dad's going back. So one of my kids did find out through social media, which it's just the day and age we live in.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You try your hardest to make sure that doesn't happen, but stuff moves so quickly these days.
My dad was super upset. He FaceTimed me. He's like, you have to be kidding me. I got to find out on the radio. So I felt bad about that.
All right. Well, we're going to get into, you mentioned your dad, mentioned your family. We're going to get into your upbringing when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Chris Burgess, new BYU basketball assistant coach. We'll have more with Chris when we come back on the Deep Blue Podcast. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. Pumped to have my guest in studio with me today. He is BYU basketball assistant coach. He is Chris Burgess. And Chris, one of the things about doing this podcast that I love, and there's a lot of things, it's talking to the people about their families and their upbringing. So that's where I want to begin now.
Yeah.
And you grew up in California. So give everybody an idea of where you grew up, what your family dynamic was, and what life was like in the Burgess household.
You know, I grew up in Southern California, a number of different homes. My parents were network marketers, and I was actually born here in Provo. But when I was 2 years old, you know, they had an opportunity to move to Southern California. So we'd bounced around a number of different cities right there in Orange County. But my childhood is with Irvine. I grew up in Irvine. I'm the third of six kids. I have two sisters, and then I had I have the rest of our brothers, and we were all athletes. You know, my dad who went to American Fork, my mom went to West High there in Salt Lake City. My dad was an athlete. You know, he was a walk on here at BYU, the freshman team before there was, you know, when freshmen couldn't play on the varsity. He went on his mission and he didn't make the varsity team. So I kind of grew up in an athletic family. All of us played baseball and basketball. Except for my older brother, he was more of a football guy. And, you know, I had my sister played at BYU. One of my younger brothers, Josh, was a walk-on here at BYU during the Arujo era. And then my brother, David, Played a year and a half here. He was a redshirt, had some injuries. He was a freshman with Lee Kamard in the Trent Plaisted and Chris Miles era, and then ended up transferring to Gonzaga, continued to have injuries, and then, anyway, ended up at a NAIA and played overseas. But our household was, we were big, we were huge, and we weren't just in numbers. We were just, you know, my parents were tall, and all of us were just big, and we kind of went about our days as normal Orange County kids and grew up just kind of playing sports and being super active. You know, there in California weather, there wasn't a time we weren't outside doing something. There were so many of us. My parents just always kicked us out of the house, and we'd go out, play baseball. We played outdoor basketball, dunk courts, or everything like that. And then, you know, I got to I actually loved baseball growing up. I played a little basketball, but I was a baseball player. I loved to pitch. I loved first base. And, like, I always was like, Dale Murphy was my idol, right? We had season tickets to the Angels right there when Wally Joyner was on the team and Jim Abbott was pitching. Like, I always thought I was going to be a major league pitcher. And then, you know, got to, like, my freshman and sophomore year, and that's when I played in a couple camps. I'm 6'9", decently athletic, and could do things that, like, all big guys can do now, right? Which was really run and shoot the ball.
Yeah.
In an era where it's like, go inside, right? And so I started getting recruited at a pretty high level. And my sophomore year, you know, I had to make this decision of playing spring basketball or doing these spring baseball and summer baseball, or, you know, start to go to these summer camps and be ranked and scouted and go to the Nike All-American camp. And so a coach came to me. His name was Tommy Amaker, assistant at Duke at the time, now the Harvard head coach. And he, through my AAU coach or my high school coach, I can't remember which one, was like, hey, if he's going to be serious about basketball, he needs to give up one of these sports. Like, he's got to give up baseball. And so that was when I stopped playing. Like, I literally was like, it was crushing to me. So I stopped playing baseball right there and go to the Nike All-American camp as a rising junior, and I'm playing with Baron Davis and Mike Bibby and, you know, Jaren Jason Collins and Corey Benjamin, and I just play well, right? And again, I wasn't like this isolation player. I ran the floor, kind of dunked on people every couple, you know, two times a half, and then I would bury a three. And so when you see, like, a kind of a 6'10 kid out there doing stuff that, like, normally 6'10 guys,
especially back then
in the mid 90s, people were like writing all this stuff, and all of a sudden rankings come out and I'm in like the top 15, and every more and more, like, this is before offers, right? But more and more coaches are coming to my gym. All of a sudden you'd have Dean Smith and Jim Boeheim and Mike Krzyzewski showing up to your gym, and I'm like, man, this is getting pretty serious, right? So I take my visits. I come with, I go to BYU. I go to Kentucky with Rick Pitino. I go to UCLA with Jim Herrick. I go to Duke. I end up canceling my visit to Kansas with Roy Williams. I just didn't feel like I would go there, even though my daughter's there now. I just kind of felt like he was such a good recruiter and such a personal person. I didn't want to waste his time. I just felt I owed it to him. And then that's kind of what it was. Like, my parents were super supportive. Like, obviously, my parents, all their family members are in Utah and still in Utah to this day. And they would have loved for me to, you know, play in Utah so they can, you know, from a family standpoint, see that. My sister was on the team here playing for, I don't know the name of the coach, but it was for Jeff Judkins. She's here. I think she's a junior. And so I ended up making ultimately a decision to, you know, I'm a dumb 17-year-old at the time. I'm like, I'm one and done. It doesn't matter where I go, right? And so I ended up going – and I felt like I was going to be the first Duke guy to ever not play 4 years. Like, that's kind of the mindset you have, which is, you know, if everyone remembers me as a 17-year-old, yeah, our brains aren't fully developed, right? And we just don't think totally. But that was kind of my goal, and ended up choosing that, right? But I was a pretty normal kid. Like, you know, obviously I was super tall, very close family. We're all very close. You know, four of us siblings all live here in Utah County. Mm-hmm. So we're very close. We get together as much as we can on Sundays. But I was pretty spoiled as a kid. And you grew up 5 minutes from the beach. Had wonderful friends that I'm still close to this day. And I was very, very fortunate to play the game of basketball and choose that direction as much as I love baseball, because it opened up so many doors. Ultimately, like, kind of met my wife out of it and saw the world out of it. And I played for coaches that, even a guy like Quinn Snyder, who was my assistant coach, that's who recruited me to Duke, right? And Johnny Dawkins was assistant coach, and now, you know, a successful coach, both Stanford and UCF. And so when I don't tell people that much, but I'm just like, I've been able to play for a number of different coaches all over the world, that starting with Coach K and Rick Majerus, Quinn Snyder, David Blatt, right, overseas, that is I'm very lucky. I was very lucky. Very lucky.
So let's go back to your recruiting out of high school. You were talking about having all these guys that were coming in and all these coaches that everybody knows who they are, and they're coming in to see you.
Yeah.
At your age, how does someone handle that? How did you handle all of that?
Yeah. Fortunately, my parents had kind of grounded me, not grounded, but like kept me grounded.
Right.
Right. With what to think about, what was important. But I was a college basketball fan, like, you know, the March Madness, right? Or ESPN games. And so when you got like Jim Boeheim coming into your high school, you know, it was, I would always kind of play it cool, but my teammates were the ones who were like, no way, like, you know what I mean? And make a big deal of it. So I kind of kept it cool as much as I could. And also I was a pretty confident kid where I'm like, yeah, it's like, I've worked really hard. Like, I'm glad they're in the gym. I've earned this, right? I've earned this type of thing. And so, but I was super grateful at the same time. Like, you're sitting in the home and Roy Williams is across with you with Matt Doherty, right? And then Coach K is across the with you with Quinn Snyder. And so that was super humbling. And then Roger Reed's there with Tony, Coach Engel, and Coach Archibald, right? And so that was it was super humbling. But, yeah, I kind of managed that way. I mean, I tell people all the time, thank goodness there was no social media. From the scrutiny to the, you know, telling how great you are, I'm so glad there was nothing like that. I'm glad the era I grew up in terms of that part.
Well, and you mentioned that obviously Coach Roger Reed was recruiting you to come to BYU, and you have a family connection to BYU, and quite frankly, I mean, I remember that time, and there was a lot of thinking. Well, of course he's coming to BYU. Yeah. He's an LDS kid, and he's going to want to come to BYU. That obviously didn't happen, and this has become a part of your story, and I know that. You're probably tired of talking about it, but the comments about letting down 9 million Mormons if you don't go to BYU, that has all played itself out very positively now. But at the time, how much stress did that cause you?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it was you're 16, 17-year-olds, and it wasn't that big of a deal. And here's why, like, for me personally, because it came down to Duke and BYU for a lot of different reasons, but not just because it was BYU and I'm an LDS kid. It's because I loved the way Coach Reed and Coach Arch and Coach Engel had recruited me. I loved my visit here and the way I was treated and everything they talked about and the fan base. I loved it. Now, I didn't grow up in this state in an era where, you know, social media, you know, I could only go to a BYU football game if they come to UCLA, right? Or if I was visiting family in the winter here in Utah, which was not very often, right, because I was a basketball player. And so I loved my recruitment there. I loved my time there. Having to call him and tell him no was one of the hardest things I ever did. And in fact, at one point I was like, Dad, can you just do it, right? And my dad's like, this is part of growing up, right? And so, you know, the lessons of doing that. So it wasn't as big of a deal to me just because of my love and respect for what they did, how they recruited me. You know, for me, you know, my dream, I had a couple dreams from a basketball player, of course, was to make the NBA. And the other thing was because I was such a March Madness kid, right, would leave school in high school and go to, like, the pizza place and watch that, you know, those first 2 days where there's tons of games. I wanted to play in a Final Four. I wanted to do that. And at the time, BYU was kind of struggling at that time. And I felt at that time in 1996, like, I didn't think I could achieve that goal. And I blame Britton Johnson as well, and I hope he listens to this. Because Britton commits early. So him and I were McDonald's All-Americans, and we became pretty good buddies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're in the camps together and all this stuff. And he commits to Utah early, right, to go play with his brother. So then when I tell Britton that story, Britton's like, blame Jeff. Jeff was the one who started it all, right? So I had felt like if, you know, Britton had gone there and there was a couple other kids. One went to Washington, which was a kid named Michael Johnson. Had a solid career there, right? He commits early to Washington. So I'm like the last LDS kid standing. And the rumors were McKelly, who I became really good friends with, McKelly Wesley, he was headed to Colorado State is what I had heard. And we had played some AAU ball together randomly when we were juniors. And so I was like, man, all these kids, no one's choosing the why. Like, I feel like I'm going to go and help this place rebuild. And again, I'm going back to the 17-year-old mindset of like, I don't want to go rebuild for one and done. I'm trying to be in the Final Four, and then I'm out. Like, that was my mindset. And so that was kind of the reason. Plus, you know, the opportunity to play in the ACC, you know, and Duke had signed Elton Brand, Shane Battier, Will Avery. And I was like, man, this class, like, we can do this. Like, this, and they're, you know, Trajan Langdon's coming back. Chris Carroll's coming back.
Coach Krzyzewski. So
Coach Krzyzewski's there. You know, Wojo's the team captain. Yeah. And I felt like I could, that goal, like, again, the NBA was like, that's a given. I'm going there, right? Like, that's going to happen. You just don't understand. Kids, I tell kids, you don't understand how hard college is, right? And I felt like that was the right place for me. It felt like it. And like, I wouldn't trade that experience in the world. Like, it was such, those 2 years, they were so magical. And the experiences I had, they were amazing. Did the things turn out basketball the way I wanted it? Probably not, but I got to play in a national championship game. I got to go to an Elite Eight. I got to play, at Michigan. I got to play in these games. I got to play in the North Carolina Duke rivalry. I got to do these things that like no one can take that away.
Yeah.
Right. And the teammates I made, we're here at the Summer League in July, we're having our 25-year reunion with the 1999 runner-up team. Like, can you just make these beautiful relationships and the experience? I wouldn't trade that in the world. Right. And my path is different, just like every kid out there and every human being's out there. And I wouldn't trade that in the world.
We are all a product of our experiences through our life. It shapes us, and it's the good and the bad. How did that experience for you shape you even to this day?
Yeah,
how does it continue to shape you?
Well, I think, first of all, like a ton of humility, right? A ton of humility in that like things can turn on you quick, right? Like you could be at the top of the world, top five recruit in the country, and everybody wants you to be a part of their program. And then it's like you're transferring. And again, this is before the transfer portal. Like there was no, when I transferred, there was no like hoopla about it. It was just, I was leaving and I was the one reaching out to schools. Do you have interest? Right. And a couple schools had kind of reached out to me, but it was different than it is now. There's no top five and top 10 and interest. There's nothing like that. I think a ton of humility, a ton of experience to draw upon, right? Like the leadership I learned from Coach K, I didn't know I was going to be a coach 20-something years ago. I had no idea. I knew I loved the game of basketball. I didn't know I was going to be a coach. No one knows really kind of what they're doing. You just assume you're going to play forever, right? And everything I draw upon in my experience at Duke and also with the kids we're recruiting that are in the transfer portal, I'm like, man, I draw upon those experiences of what that kid's going through. And I look right in the parents' eyes. I was like, I know what your kid's going through. Like, I know how, this is more so prevalent in the last 5 or 6 years as opposed to the last two, because everyone's transferring for all different reasons now. But before, when a kid would go to like a high major university in the ACC or the Big 12 or the Big 10, it didn't work out. Right. And they're trying to fix their career. Like Alex Barcelo goes to Arizona. He's trying to fix his career. He's a top, 10 point guard in the country. So I'm able to draw upon those experiences during the recruiting process, during your coaching process. I know what it's like to be a little bit broken, to have a little bit of doubt, to have a little bit of like you're humbled.
Yeah.
Right. And so I draw upon those experiences. And then my kids, too, like my kids all the time, I draw upon, so like try to keep them humble, try to keep them to work hard, because you truly, they want to be athletes and they want to be great. They don't know how hard it is. Right. And I think that's something I try to draw upon as well, is just getting them to work hard, whether they're athletes or not. Right. Like just how hard it is, and trying to be, keep your feet where they are every single day. Don't look ahead. Don't look behind you. Like be where your feet are, is what we say. And then work as hard as you can, be an extraordinary teammate, and be intellectually curious, right? And I think that's the lessons I've learned from the many people I've been around and the experience that I've had.
So what was the reason that you decided to transfer, and why was Utah the place that fit you?
Yeah, so felt like at the time we just lost the national championship. I felt at the time that like, hey, if I want to be a starter or be more part of the offense, maybe I probably should go down a level. And not that Utah wasn't a top 25 team or anything like that. I felt like I needed to go down a level in terms of from ACC to, it was the Mountain West at the time, brand new Mountain West. And so I felt like I needed to go down. And for me, the teams that I had kind of reached out to and reached out to me, Quinn Snyder gets the head job in Missouri. Mm-hmm. So he had reached out to me. And I told Coach Snyder, I was like, hey, I'm probably going to go closer home. And then the other one was Steve Lavin at UCLA. And I loved Lav. He was the assistant coach that recruited me. And so it was kind of between UCLA. And then I reached out to Donnie Daniels because they had recruited me a little bit during high school because of the success they were having as a team, but the success they were having ultimately with their big men. Hanno Medela, Keith Van Horn, Michael Doliak, Josh Grant. So that to me was more about like the success he had there. And again, I go back to Britton. Britton and I were pretty close. He was on his mission serving in Houston. So I was writing him being like, there's a potential chance we could play together. So it was an opportunity to play with Britton, a good friend of mine, and play for Coach Majerus and what he had been doing with his bigs. Because like, I got to go fix my career. I'm broken. Like, why wouldn't I go play for a coach that's had a ton of success and he's going to hold you accountable every single day, whether you liked it or not. So that was why I ultimately transferred there.
So after your college career is over then, and it's time to look at a professional career, you had had, you know, before you committed to college, you know, you had sort of a plan that what you how you thought it was going to play out. It doesn't play out like that. So how did you handle that aspect?
Yeah, so I had a ton of I had two kind of bad injuries, and in three actually. In my redshirt year, I tear my back, and I got a bulging disc, L5, L4, S1, whatever it is. And then that kept me out most of my redshirt year, which was probably one of the most important years of my career. Like, I just needed to be out there and mentally watch the game. And so then my junior year, I break my foot, and then my senior year, I tear my plantar fascia. And ironically, the new coach, Will Voigt, was on that other team's bench. He had just told me about that. I toured against December 29, 2001 against Texas at home on ABC. And
really?
Will Voigt was an assistant with Rick Barnes. So I tear my foot.
What a small coaching
world.
Wow.
Total small world. So I get hurt, right? But I go into IMG Academy as soon as the season ends. We lose to Indiana first round. I'm on the bench. There was a talk about me trying to petition to the NCAA to get a waiver and play another year, get the year back. And I was like, nah, I'm getting married. I want to go play pro. So I ended up getting a Portsmouth invite, and I'm healthy. And then I played well enough in Portsmouth. I get a combine, an NBA combine. And so in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is a different path to the NBA.
Yeah.
But I got to find maybe that role player, right? Like that 13th guy, that 14th guy. So I get invited. I don't get drafted. I get invited to Phoenix camp, the Suns, playing the summer league. Actually played here in Salt Lake. Remember the old review back when they played
Rocky Mountain Review?
Yeah, Rocky Mountain Review at Slick, which was great because I got a huge, like a lot of fans were cheering for me. I was going against Alex. He was with the Mavericks. Alex Jensen with the Mavericks. So we get a big fan appreciation. So I ultimately go to training camp. I get cut right before the season starts, and I start my international journey. And I was just like, honestly, I was just super grateful that I was continuing playing and being a pro simply because of the injuries I had. And there were some dark times during my senior year when I tore my foot where I'm like, man, am I ever going to play again? Am I just that guy who's just injury prone? Because you'd read about all those guys that just couldn't do it because they're always injured. And it was three straight seasons. And I don't know if that corresponds with Coach Majerus's practices or not, but there was three straight seasons where it was really dark for me in terms of like my identity was taken away in terms of a basketball player. And so I was just grateful to be playing. Right, I was grateful to be playing in the you know, which was the old CBA, right? The minor leagues in the CBA, and then in Turkey, and I kept coming back the summer and doing summer leagues. I did with Coach Ainge invited me two summers to play with the Celtics, and then my fourth summer I was with the Washington Wizards, and we're playing in Long Beach in the Pyramid at that summer league, and I'm playing behind a guy that they drafted, and I played 4 years overseas now and felt like I had a pretty good career. And my family's super young. I think I had two kids at the time. I have five now, so I had two kids at the time. And I don't really play a lot. And we're playing the Lakers, and they have Andrew Bynum they just drafted, and can't remember who else on that Lakers team. And it was in L.A., and so I have friends there. And I got super frustrated after the game because I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, this, like, I didn't serve a mission, but it's got to feel like the door is constantly getting slammed in your face. So I called my agent, and I was like, hey, I'm grateful that I'm continuing to play basketball, that I'm a pro at some level, and my family's starting to get bigger. No more NBA. That was the day we were playing the Lakers. I was in the Long Beach Pyramid. I didn't really get a lot of minutes, and I was like, I don't need the summer league anymore. I'm very happy and content. I can look at myself in the mirror and be like, I gave everything I gave everything I can to this game to make the NBA. It was not working out.
Did that lift stress off your shoulders?
It did.
Kind of crazy,
it
right?
It lifted a lot of stress off my shoulders.
How that was such a big goal, and then by giving it up, you actually feel better.
Yep. I called my agent's name was Andrew Bai. I called him, and I was like, I'm done. He got me off. So there's like three games left.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't need this anymore. And so I'd signed a pro contract to go play in South Korea. Crazy, I know, but I was super excited about that contract. I had just come off a championship in the Puerto Rico League. We're like, this is the first time in club history. And so I was very happy with the way my career was going. And I got this beautiful young family. My second daughter is just born. So I made the call. I was like, I'm done. I've done everything I could, and I moved on. And so that I was able to focus the next, seven more years playing overseas and enjoying my summers. Because that's the thing. It's like let's say you finish in May and June. Now you got 2 weeks off. Now you're getting ready for NBA, summer league. And that goes through all of July. And then you're back overseas again. And so I was like, I just want to come home, work on my game, visit family, and enjoy my summer. Like, I'm content.
Yeah.
I've given everything to this game, and I'm going to continue to take advantage of it. So that's kind of when it all started playing overseas. So I played 11 years overseas, and and enjoyed every single second of it and got to see the world on another team's dime. And I've been to places that I never thought I would go. I didn't learn a ton of different languages, but I was able to conversations in so many different languages. I had a third daughter born in Turkey, which is the most amazing experience that, you know, I think a lot of, if some women out there would listen to it, probably slap me in the face for taking my wife to this middle of this country and middle of this city in Turkey and making them do that to her. But anyway, so just super grateful for my career, 11 years overseas, and I'm where I am today because of those experiences and that path.
Well, and when the time came to hang up the basketball shoes, it obvious to you, or did you struggle with it?
Struggled with it because so I just finished my 10th year, and my wife Lisa, we just had a baby boy. He's like 2 or 3 months old. She gets pregnant again, and she's trying to manage 4 kids in Poland overseas. So anyway, we have our 5th kid September, and she's like, I can't do this. It's like, I can't do 5 kids overseas. It's too hard. So I went to go play, of all places, in the UAE. So Dubai, right? And the reason I chose that is because I felt like the whole family could come over there. There's a lot of, it was English, mostly English speaking, a lot of expats over there, a great branch, right? A great church for a branch. Anyway, so I play that whole season, 10 months, by myself. And that was really hard. You got 5 kids back at home here in Bountiful, and so you feel like you're a bad dad, right? You feel like you're a bad dad not helping raise these kids, and you're just hooping. I'm just hooping.
Yeah.
And so when I hung them up, what I did, because I had all that time over in Dubai at the time, I never graduated from the U. I had like maybe 12 credits left. I never graduated. And so I called someone over there in athletics, Larry's on his year two, something like that, with Larry Koskoviak's on year two. And I was like, hey, is there someone I could talk to help me figure out, like find my transcript, see what I need? So I started taking classes to help me graduate, because I'm like, this is going to be my last year. I just knew it. This is going to be my last year. I'm not traveling over. We're not doing this. We're not keeping the family apart. Like, again, you're trying to keep everything in perspective. Family's got to be number one. And that was the first year it wasn't. So I knew this had to be it. So I was kind of coming to some closure of ending my career, and it was awesome because we won the championship and went out on top for, my overseas career. Well, I was taking classes. Like, this is kind of how I fell into coaching. So I'm taking classes, and then I finished the spring, and I go back, and I call the academic person. I was just like, yeah, can you put me in some summer classes? And he's like, yeah, I'll put you in summer classes. So I'm on track to graduate probably in the winter. Mm-hmm. And Phil Cullen is the director of basketball ops for Utah. And Phil was my teammate. In fact, he introduced me to my wife. But he was my teammate at the University of Utah. And so I call Phil, and I'm like, hey, can I work some camps? I'm going to be in classes there in the summer. Can I work some camps? So I do start working camps. I'm taking a couple classes. And then Tommy Connor and Phil, they call me in their office during the camps. They're just like, why don't you be an undergrad assistant coach like this season? You're not going back, right? I'm like, no, I'm done. I'm retired. He's like, well, do you have a job? I'm like, nah, I'm just going to graduate. I'll figure it out. Like, I've done well enough overseas. Allow me a little runway to kind of figure this out. He's like, dude, come be an undergraduate assistant. I was like, well, what is that? They're like, well, it's a graduate assistant, but you're taking undergraduate classes. I was like, well, will you guys pay for the classes? They're like, yeah. And they're like, in fact, we could put you on scholarship. So I'm a scholarship guy. I'm like the liaison. So I'm a practice player, basically. But I'm like a liaison for the coaches and the players. And like, I would always gravitate towards the player side. And all of a sudden I look at the coaches down the other side of the court.
Give
I'm like, I probably should go down there, right? But I'm 33 years old. I'm like, man, I should be on that side. So again, I didn't know if I wanted to coach, but that's why I fell in love with it. I fell in love with like the practices and the game prep and the competitiveness and being around the guys and being around the coach staff and learning. And I just sat in the meetings I was allowed to go to. I sat in the back and just listened, and I loved it, right? So that season, it's DeLon Wright's first year that we lose in the NIT, it ends. And I go and talk to like the director of basketball operations, who's Norm Parrish, is a legend here in Salt Lake, coached at Salt Lake Community College, won a national championship there. And I'm like, how do I get into this business? Like, I kind of just did this past year to just finish my degree, which I'm graduating. I'm, moving on. I'm like, how do I get in this? He's like, the best advice I have for you is just go volunteer. I'm like, well, where? So I go and volunteer at SLIC, yeah. Salt Lake Community. And that's kind of how my career started.
So you started, you tell me if I've got this right.
Yeah.
Okay. So grad assistant at Utah.
Undergrad.
Or undergrad, excuse me.
Yeah.
At Utah. Then you go to SLIC.
Go to SLIC.
Indian Hills Community College.
Yep.
Utah Valley.
Yep.
BYU.
Yep.
Utah.
Yeah.
And now back to BYU.
Crazy.
If I missed anything?
No, you didn't miss anything. So
is it crazy to think that,
yeah.
like, have you ever thought about, had the opportunity out of the blue yeah. to take part in Utah as an undergrad student, had yeah. that not happened, what you would have done? Do you think you would have found your way to coaching eventually?
No.
Or what do you think you'd be doing today?
I don't
today?
Think I would have found it. I really don't. And like the whole purpose was to just get my degree. Because I'm like, I'm 33 years old. My kids are getting old enough. Talking about how important education is. And I was like, how do I not have my degree? I went to 5 years of school. Like, I got to go get it. So that's how it happened, right? And so like people always ask me like, this coaching, these kids who want to get into coaching, these young men who want to get into coaching, they always ask me, like, how did you do it? Or what advice do you have? And it's like, every path's different, right? But like, I just went and volunteered at Salt Lake for Todd, right? And I'm there like 3 months. And then I'm just doing summer workouts. I'm coaching a fourth grade basketball club at the same time. No kids on the team. I'm just doing it. That was kind of my income. I'm a volunteer. I'm making no money at Salt Lake Community. I don't know what I was making at Utah basketball, but it wasn't very much. My wife was working on the side, which was fine.
And she's a former Utah athlete.
She's a former Utah. She was a soccer player, yeah. So she's working a little bit. And so 3 months into the Salt Lake job, as I'm volunteering, John Wardenberg calls me, former assistant coach at BYU. He yeah. just got called as the head coach. He just got elevated as a head coach at Indian Hills Community College, which is probably a top 10 junior college in the country. Now, SLIC is also a top 15 every single year as well. But John was like, hey, I'll make you the associate. And I can actually pay you and put you on benefits. And I was like, he's like, but you got to move out to Iowa. So again, like the last 11 years, all I know is packing up the house and the kids and moving. So I'm like, Iowa, they speak English, right? Like yeah. this is an easy move, right? I'm like, so we pack up the house. We were renting a place in North Salt Lake, move the whole family and go coach for 9 months for Indian Hills. And I had already kind of met Mark Pope through the last yeah. couple of years being on circuit, and Pope would give me a ton of advice. He's at BYU as an assistant working for Dave Rose, and he gave me a ton of advice on the road. And I've got like, you know, no idea what he's talking about, but other than just like, you know, because you don't know what you don't know when you're young in this business, right? And so I go to Indian Hills, we have a great year. Mark gets the, Pope gets the Utah Valley job, and I just kind of called him, was like, hey, I would love to come, we'll help you out. And,
yeah.
you know, I know that area, and I think it'd be great. And, you know, and so he, you know, Coach Pope, right? He's very meticulous and hits you with a ton of questions and pushes you to the extreme. And so I was like, I just don't think I'm going to get this job. Anyway, so he hires me. And then the rest is kind of history.
Wow. Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And Coach Wardenberg, by the way, that you were with at Indian Hills.
Yeah.
I love him. I get, because he's with the women's team yeah. now, and I call the women's games. So I get to be around Coach Wardenberg.
Yeah.
In fact, saw him yesterday. I love him.
Love
he's
him.
Such a great guy.
He is. He is. He is genuinely cares about you. He knew I was young. He loved that I was a family guy. He spent like he looks at my kids now and he's just like, I can't believe it, right? They were just little kids. So he is just like you said, he's a great guy.
So you said at the beginning of the interview when I asked you about the BYU gear, you said you always had a feeling
yeah.
that BYU was you were not done with BYU. So my last question to you is
yeah.
and not specifically just the basketball program and being back with the basketball team, being able to come back, what does it mean to you and your family
yeah.
to once again be back at BYU and everything that it represents?
Yeah, it means the world to us. It really does. You know, the BYU's mission is something that, you know, we try to, you know, strive to live every single day. We love what it represents. We love the fan base. We love the support that it has. We enjoyed, you know, we understand the mission. We understand the goals. We understand the sacrifice that these kids have to be a part of something bigger themselves. Well, us coaches as well, and us as in my, you know, our family, we're sacrificing a lot, and we understand how important this place is to me. And what I mean by that is our time away from our families to be with these young men on the team, these student athletes, to be a part of this program. So it means the world to us. We love being a part of it. We love putting on, I love every single day waking up, putting on the blue, putting on the BYU logo every single day. I love being able to coach these young men. I love working for Coach Young, and I'm just super grateful to be back or anything. And you know, there was times where, you know, during the interview process, like, is this real? Like, what is this going to happen? How weird is this going to be? And not that it was the wrong or right place. It was just you coming
yeah.
back, right? And and how easy this transition has been is because of the support of that fan base, support the support of the people in the administration, and the support of those players on in that locker room, right? So I'm just really grateful.
Well, you hear people say, oh, he's one of the good guys. I'm here to tell you, Chris, you're one of the good guys.
No, I appreciate that.
I enjoyed getting to know you in the previous years, and I am so excited that you're back and to be able to continue that relationship, both personally and working relationship. Yeah. I'm so glad to have you back, and I'm so grateful that you were able to give us this much time and to do the podcast.
No, I appreciate you. I appreciate you having me on. This has been a ton of fun for me. Just talking and talking sports, talking to my family, and talking BYU.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks once again to my guest, Chris Burgess. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio. Yeah.